This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we're going over Pottersville. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one. We will catch you next time.
Bleep, bleep, bleep. That's all, folks.
Oh, are you ready for one drag is?
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one Christmas-adjacent movie in the month of December. Today, we are covering Pottersville, a Christmas-adjacent movie, because I was inspired by my lovely co-host, who has the most luscious locks and cooks the most delightful food. And I mention this because we're recording this on Thanksgiving. Miss Tamara Cosio. Mm-hmm.
I was like, where are you going? Are you going to compare me to Bigfoot with the hair? I don't get it.
No.
This movie does have a little bit of a Bigfoot theme. So I am here across from my bestie, my favorite cryptid. And you know I love a good word mashup, so I'm going to call her Corinne Did.
Thank you, Did.
Because a cryptid is an animal whose existence or survival to the present day is disputed or unsubstantiated, even though I know very well that you are for real. Either that or I am very crazy.
I am her imaginary friend, and I am actually a figment of y'all's imaginations. Do I exist? I don't know.
Wouldn't that be insane if I recorded 116 episodes of this podcast and it was just me and my imaginary friends? So all the times that you were talking, it was just big gaps. And then they came and took me away.
Well, you know, some people do say that I sound like you. So who knows?
What? I don't. So, Corinne, anything been going on with you? Lately? Is there a reason why we're recording on Thanksgiving that you'd like to share with us, even though I totally don't mind? It's totally fine, even though I have to get a turkey in the oven in the next 2 hours after we record.
No pressure. Well, you know, it's a twofold thing. First, I thought that even though this episode is coming out the first Tuesday in December, we are recording on Thanksgiving. And so I thought it would be a great time for us to share things that we are thankful for. The other reason, though, was that since my sister died, my dad had been having some issues with fainting, like just passing out hard. Mm-hmm. And and he would do this kind of in a series of two, like it would happen. He'd go to the emergency room. He'd come back home. It would happen again. He'd go to the emergency room again. Then they'd give him a heart monitor. Well, nothing was ever captured on heart monitors. Then, because they always wait until the second time that these things happen, and then he wouldn't have an incident for a long time. Well, when he most recently had an event on Tuesday, they actually gave him a heart monitor to go home with after the first event. When he came home, he took a nap. And during that nap, my mom received a call from the heart monitoring people, and his heart had stopped for 29 seconds, which apparently is close to death. So,
fun stuff. Good times.
They told my mom that they should take him to the emergency room again.
Yay.
And also, dad totally still alive, totally fine, but he will be getting a pacemaker on Friday, and he went to the emergency room for the second time on Wednesday, and so I thought that my mom might appreciate me giving her some company when her husband that she'd been married to for over 50 years had almost died. So, yes.
And here we are on Thursday, Thanksgiving, giving thanks for being together and thankful that your dad is okay, even though he is a very deep sleeper, according to his heart monitor.
So deep, his heart is even sleeping on him. No, we don't want that to happen.
No.
But we also would really like to take a moment to send out some thanks to our gentle listeners and, you know, the people who have been with us all along and the people who have recently joined us. We are so grateful for you and for you listening to and enjoying our podcast. This podcast is a labor of love for us. And another highlight, in addition to our gentle listeners and my dad not being dieted is when I was having a day yesterday and Tamara texted me and gave me some just news that made my heart happy.
What was that? What news did I give you? Oh, was it when I accidentally tried to send a I will be out of the office for 2 days response to all my coworkers and inadvertently almost returned every single email that everybody ever sent to me back to them, causing me to panic because I thought I was bombarding everybody with thousands of emails before I left for 2 days. Is that the good news? Is that what I shared with you?
That I would not actually qualify that under good news. I would be thankful, though, that you only managed to send out 30 odd emails to each and every coworker instead of hundreds to thousands of emails. To every coworker.
Because my lovely coworker that did call me and said, I'm getting a bunch of emails from you that are really old. And I said, how many did you have? And he said 644. So I thought he said he got 644 emails from me. But in fact, he said that he had been getting them since 644. And he only got about 30 before I stopped the action. But I was like running amok all throughout town going, oh my God, oh my God. Like people are going to get every single email that I sent to them back. This is awesome. This is awesome. So also probably a good idea that we didn't record last night because I was in a tizzy. But no, you know nothing about being in a tizzy over some stressful stuff. So let me just bask in this for a second because you have nothing going on right now.
No, nothing going on. I was actually talking about how you mentioned that Let's Go to Court, Brandy and Kristen were nice enough to mention us on their podcast. Oh,
I love them so much. I almost cried in my office. I cry in my office often, but it's for other reasons. And then I saw that and I was like, they're so goddamn sweet and generous and amazing. And I am so thankful that we are even in their scope of thought. Like, honestly, just hearing our podcast come out of their mouths is like, it tickles me to no end. I feel like Christmas magic has been bestowed upon us every time that happens.
Seriously. And I feel bad because of my complicated relationship with Twitter X, but we got the loveliest text from Rebecca Lavoie shouting us out, who is in the show Crime Writers On, and they do great reviews of different kinds of like crime documentaries and all sorts of stuff. And like, I love that we are surrounded by all these lovely ladies of podcasting.
I know. Looks like we made it. I'm just kidding. We haven't, but
no, we haven't made it. But
for a few brief shining seconds, we can pretend.
Yeah. And I'm so thankful for the positive people in our lives.
Yeah. They are many, and we are thankful for them all, especially on this day, Thanksgiving, in Tamara and Corinne world.
Yes, and that also includes, like, friends, Tamara, family,
Joe, Barbara,
not dad being dieted, you know, like, lots of things like that as well.
So let's just bask in the glow of all the things that we could be thankful for.
Now that we're in December and we're getting closer to Christmas, I thought, you know, gentle listeners, I have bestowed a lot of Hallmark from you from my end. And I thought since Tamara did Steel Magnolias, which was a highly Christmas adjacent movie, that I would also follow suit and do a slightly less but also very Christmas adjacent movie, Pottersville.
You know what? Like, you bring the Hallmark Christmas magic, and I'm like, I'm just going to take a little dip out of the Christmas pool.
Yeah.
You know, a little dry off from the Christmas spirit. So it's to add levity and perhaps a little something for people to listen to if they're not, like, super totally into Christmas.
I love how you used the word levity and Steel Magnolias in the same sentence. I just thought it's I'd bring the highly hilarious Steel Magnolias.
It is.
It's just a laugh a minute.
You know what? Let's stop talking about Steel Magnolias and start talking about Pottersville, shall we?
Well, speaking of which, do you have a legendary synopsis for us in regards to Pottersville?
I do.
Oh, and what? We can almost think of this as a tribute to Let's Go to Court because of their juvenile Bigfoot episode.
This one's for you, Kristen and Brandy.
Yes. And we have this is all about Bigfoot Bigfoot-aramas.
Yeah, Bigfoot-aramas. It's so funny. Larry actually watched this with me, and he watches all the documentaries about Bigfoot and aliens and cryptids and all that stuff, which is wonderful because I'm interested in that too. So he had some interesting, insightful comments that I will pepper throughout this outline. Yes. Anyways. Synopsis. Maynard Grieger, sometimes called May by his friends, played by Michael Shannon, is a shop owner in the heart of a small, struggling town named Pottersville. The local mill closed down and most people are out of work and struggling. Until one day, Maynard comes home early from work and discovers his wife having a very inappropriate play date, in quotation marks. Maynard goes on a drunken bender that night and accidentally dresses up like a Sasquatch, as you sometimes do when your heart is broken, and tears through town.
Always.
Some townsfolk see him and think, oh, Bigfoot is real, which causes a surge in tourism. Everyone's on board the Bigfoot train, choo-choo, except Maynard's co-worker Parker, played by Judy Greer. Eventually, the Bigfoot craze gets so extreme that Pottersville is visited by the renowned Brock Masterson, cryptid hunter, played by Thomas Lennon, who's there to shoot an episode of his hit TV show and possibly catch the Squatch. Maynard must decide whether he will come clean about his nightly escapades and clear his conscience, which will also ultimately clear out the town of their newfound revenue stream, or continue the ruse and deny his nagging conscience and deny his growing feelings for Parker. Find out with us as we skid on over to Pottersville.
Nice.
Thank you. So, Corinne, would you like to open your car door, invite us in to the ride that'll take us to Pottersville?
Choo-choo. I am ready. I mean, beep, 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 beep.
Oh.
Yes.
Maybe I should have said that chain. Okay. Do you want to slow down the train? And let us all aboard towards Pottersville?
All aboard. Choo-choo. Yeah. And I do want to say that in this movie, there are furries, many furries. And and I have a friend who's a furry, and I don't mention that in a, well, I've got a friend who's a furry kind of way, but just in a, I feel like furries, they're treated just fine in this movie. Like, they're doing what furries do, and they're just being themselves, and that's okay. So if you are a furry, it should be okay if you listen to this episode. Hopefully you won't be offended. And if you are, please let us know. I'm not interested in hurting any furry friend feelings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We open on a montage of a quaint, small, Hallmark-like town. Because I just can't leave the Hallmark behind, of Pottersville. The only difference, Tamara's looking at me with like,
Yeah, peppering the Hallmark in there, even though we're not doing a Hallmark movie.
Just can't leave it behind. I can't quit you, Hallmark. I can't quit you. The only difference is that many of the shops are closed and the houses are in disrepair. Pottersville has fallen on, oh, hard times come again no more. Maynard, a 40-something man still holding on to his brown hair, looking like an average white guy, parks his VW microbus across the street from his general store. He goes in and starts prepping the store for the day, clears snow from his section of the sidewalk, and appears to be the only shop open on said block. His store, beyond being super cute and like one would be in a Hallmark movie, seems to be a lifeline to the town, providing much needed supplies and groceries. And Maynard graciously extends credit to his customers, as many of them are unemployed from the mill closing down. His one employee, Parker, a 40-something cute white blonde woman played by Judy Greer, who also played the toxic bestie Lucy Wyman in 13 Going on 30, witnesses him extending credit to a woman buying groceries for her family. After she leaves, Parker remarks, "You're a good man, May." But Maynard just shrugs it off.
It's so hard for me to see her in a positive, like, sunshiny light that she plays in this movie, because every time I see her, I'm like, Lucy Wyman, traitorous biatch. You're going to steal my shop from under me and sell it to the competition like you did in 13 Going on 30.
You just have this, like, her horrible PowerPoint presentation of, like, the heroin chic models going through your mind.
Yes. Dripping deadly fashion at Maynard's store.
Yeah, yeah.
But His store is super fucking cute. I was hoping that she would, when I saw that, I'm like, Corinne's got to talk about how goddamn cute this store is, because it's so quaint and old timey and not like anything I have around here in my neighborhood. But I'm like, she might not even notice it, because a lot of stores in her neck of Oakland look like this, and she might not appreciate it because she's surrounded by cute, quaint stores, much like Maynard's.
There is a reason why I am surrounded by cute, quaint stores, because I do appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah. It made me sad and happy at the same time. I'm like, oh my God, look at that store. Why can't I go shopping anywhere like that around me? Damn it.
Well, you know, if you lived near me, that wouldn't be a problem.
Oh, or if I lived in the super, super expensive parts of L.A., like when we used to go to a sandwich shop that was in a liquor store that was super cute, that also had a very cute toy store across the street. When I used to live in Hollywood, I used to be cute store area adjacent, but not anymore.
Back to the store. Later, local poacher Bart, played by Ian McShane, notably known for playing Elswergen in Deadwood. But also, back in the day, he was a bit of a rogue in a BBC series. The TV series Lovejoy that went from 1986 to 1994.
Oh, wow.
I know. He wears many horrible 80s sweaters in it, and he is a bit of a scamp, and it is lovely. Anyways.
So not far off from his role here, sans
he kind of, yeah. I mean, he's a bit of a scamp in this as well, so... Bart comes by selling different cuts of poached meats. Maynard gamely buys some elk steaks, stating, "Oh, Connie," Maynard's wife, "just loves these." Bart is pleased with his sale and takes a swig of his moonshine from a flask. Maynard says, "You gotta be careful with that moonshine, Bart." Bart responds, "You spend too much time stuck behind your counter. You've gotta get out there, breathe some fresh air. One day, you'll wake up and say, is this my beautiful life? Is this my beautiful house? How did I get here?"
When the days go by, water flowing under a lifetime.
Water flowing underground once in a lifetime. Yes. Bart reaches into his pocket and pulls out a large flask-sized bottle of moonshine, hands it to Maynard, saying, "For the next time, you want to get a little crazy." Once Bart has left, Maynard is inspired by him and asks Parker if she'll close up the shop so he can surprise his wife, Connie, cook up those elk steaks, open a bottle of wine, and romance her a bit. Parker is happy to help, and Maynard takes off his apron and heads on home.
Once Maynard arrives home to his beautiful, beautiful, freaking cute-ass two-story Victorian-style home.
Tell me how you really feel.
Oh, my God. Like, ugh. The accents and the molding on the outside of the house. It was so freaking adorable, and it had a nice porch, and I just wanted to move in right away. But when don't I? He gets to his two-story Victorian home and announces, "Hi, honey," as he closes the door behind him. He has a bouquet of roses and explains loudly to the room, figuring that his wife is just out of sight, "Don't have a heart attack, but I decided to come home early so I could have a nice romantic evening with you." He puts the elk steaks in the fridge and then walks into the main part of the house asking, "Connie, you here?" Suddenly he hears a upstairs, and he excitedly says, "Did she get a puppy?" He races upstairs, but no, sadly it's not a puppy. He opens the bedroom door to find Connie dressed in a bunny outfit. No, no, not a sexy Playboy bunny outfit. A white furry onesie with the big white bunny head, like you'd wear to a children's party or an amusement park. But it's just not Connie there. There's also someone there in a full on furry big bad wolf costume. Maynard is puzzled as fuck at the scene, and Connie's surprised that he's home. And the big bad wolf tells Connie pretty nonchalantly, "Yeah, I'm just gonna head out here right now." Maynard's head swivels towards the voice and says, "Jack, why are you dressed up like a squirrel in the bedroom with my wife?" Connie intervenes, "I can explain," but Maynard doesn't give her a chance and accuses, "You can explain why you're dressed as a rabbit having sex with a squirrel?" Jack responds gruffly, "I'm a wolf." And Connie says defensively, "We don't have sex." Jack concurs, "It's one of the rules of the club." Maynard, even more confused, asks, "There's a club? A dress up like a squirrel and have sex with my wife club? How many are there?" The two furries look at each other and ultimately say, "About 32. It's across the entire Tri-County area." And Jack adds, "I'm a wolf." Maynard's wife comes clean, even though she's been very, very dirty. Ooh. I've been meaning to talk to you about this for a while. She takes off her bunny head, revealing the very cute head of Connie, played by Christina Hendricks, most notably from the TV shows Mad Men and Good Girls, and complains, I'm bored. I need some excitement, something more than what happens day in and day out. Maynard's pissed. So instead of talking to me about it, you're going to have sex with a squirrel? Jack has had it. I'm a wolf. Arr! And Maynard, the wolf, pulls off his squirrel slash wolf head, revealing the actual head of Jack, played by Ron motherfucking Perlman. Can I ask you a favor? Maynard automatically resorts to his nice guy mode and says, sure, buddy, what do you need? And Jack explains, I'm kind of a big deal in this town, so if other people found out, it would ruin me. Can you keep this to yourself? May asks incredulously, but don't 32 other people already know? And Connie interrupts. Her husband, who is still there holding a bouquet of red roses, by the way. I think we need to take some time apart to figure out what we want. Maynard processes this quietly and leaves the room, driving back into town. Poor guy.
I wonder if they had him say squirrel for most of that scene because he's one of those people who can't say the word wolf. He says woof.
Oh, he can't. Is that right? I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, and the
woof.
I think in one of the scenes he says wolf a couple of times in it, and it's woof instead, which That's is adorable. It's an interesting word because like there's some people who just have a hard time saying it, and in the show Angel there was the bad guy corporation was Wolfram and Hart, and David Boreanaz couldn't say wolf, and so he would say Wolfram and Hart. And I think when one is a writer, one has to be careful about when they include the word wolf in their scripts and how integral that is, because it's just one of those words.
Wolf. Well, I didn't even know if I could say it right. Now I have to try it. Wolf. Yes. I'm good.
Yeah.
Wolf. Wolf, 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 wolf,
wolf, wolf, wolf, wolf, wolf, wolf, wolf, wolf. But back to what is really important, which is this movie and not whether people say wolf or woof.
But if you're interested, try it at home right now. Are you one of the few that can say wolves?
So I'm figuring that Maynard spent a great deal of time sitting in his parked car contemplating life and drinking that moonshine, because by the time he returns to his store, he's very drunk. How drunk would you say he is, Tam?
I would say he is probably blowing three times over the legal limit at least. And he's not a drinker, as he states to his coworker.
It's dark out and Parker is about to leave. He lets her know, Connie's broken up with me. And the one time I decide to step outside my comfort zone and breathe out fresh air of spontaneity, I end up breathing in poop instead. Connie is sympathetic. Ew. Tries to get him some coffee, but Maynard's like, no, I still got half a bottle of moonshine left to drink. Because at that point, it just seems like adding more on is a great idea.
You haven't been drunk before, Corinne, but that's normally how it goes. When people are at that level of drunkenness, they're like, nah, fine. I'm going to keep drinking until 4 o'clock in the morning. Everything's going to be great.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Because you just want to keep that good time rolling, and despite what your liver in head says.
Which is why I never started drinking in the first place, because I knew that I'd get to that point and just be like, you know, it'd be a good idea. What if we drank some more? Yeah.
Yes. And you'd be in good company, because that tends to happen. Hence all of the times that you try to get your friends to leave the bar and they don't want to, even though they're fall down drunk.
Yeah, exactly. Parker is trying to be supportive of Maynard, but once Maynard asks Parker if she belongs to a furry sex club, Parker hoofs it out of there because she's not dealing with whatever that bullshit is, and assures Maynard before she heads out the door that she'll be checking in on him in the morning. As soon as she leaves, Maynard chugs the rest of the moonshine, vowing, I'll play freaky forest animals with you, and staggers towards the hunting gear section of his little store, where he drunkenly puts on some camo gear and a ghillie suit. And a ghillie suit is...
Wait.
Go ahead.
Go ahead and say what a ghillie suit is, but I have to stop you after the ghillie suit and point out something.
A ghillie suit is like, it's like camo. If camo, instead of the little splotches, had like long moss all over it, basically.
Yeah, it's a look. But did you notice? So he has the ghillie suit hanging on this little cute cabinet. Mm-hmm. It's got like camping and hunting gear on all the shelves, except for the top shelf, which inexplicably has a bunch of Fisher Price Little People farmhouses.
Oh,
what,
yeah.
What kind of merchandising bullshit is that? Like,
I loved my Fisher Price Little Farmhouse. Every time I saw that, I would be like, I remember my Fisher Price Little Farmhouse. I love playing with that thing.
Yes, but would you put it above the hunting and camping gear in that store? Probably not. Probably not.
I don't know. It's, you know, rustic, country. It works.
I knew you were going to justify it. I knew you were. I was going to be like, look at that. And Chris is going to be like, it's fine. It's fine. It's if not fine, Corinne. Barbie... I've worked in retail.
If it were a Barbie dream house, I would be like, no. But, you know, farms are hunting adjacent.
My many, many years of retail tells me it's wrong and I am going to die on this hill. You should not put the little people farmhouses on top of the hunting and camping gear.
Okay. The more Corinne learns, bling.
I could just imagine some little kid like trying to crawl up there to get said farmhouses and accidentally like knocking over the, I don't know, the hunting knives and the canteens and the fire kits and all that dangerous stuff to get to it.
I don't think they were for sale. I think they were for decor.
No, they wouldn't have four or five up there for decor. They were definitely selling them.
Oh, we are different on this one. It's time for us to get ungrateful on this Thanksgiving and get into an all-out, drag-out fight over the three farmhouses that were on the top of that shelf in the movie.
That's right, gentle listeners. Please go to onedrykiss@gmail.com. And if you believe that Tamara's right, which she is, just say, yes, it was merchandising and a bad idea. If you believe that it was that Corinne's right, you could put, no, they're fucking decorations, calm the fuck down, in the subject line, and we will tally them before our next episode.
I may end up on Spotify putting up a poll.
Son of a bitch. Yeah, well, I want to see how you word that poll before you put it, because I don't want you to like...
Jeez.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay.
So, anywho's, when Maynard says, I'll play freaky forest animals with you, he's talking about Connie, not Parker, and he drunkenly puts on the ghillie suit, which makes him look like a walking moss man, and then stumbles back into the storeroom and goes through a box that has several masks in it, finding a gorilla mask and gloves. He roars fiercely, roar, and heads out the back door, staggering drunkenly down the street and roaring for effect. The next morning, he wakes up. Naked in the storeroom. Covered in his sleeping bag. And Parker opens the door, calling through it. Maynard, it's time for you to get... I'll just shut the door so you can get ready. She glances at his partially covered but obviously unclothed state and hustles back into the main part of the store. Maynard blearily gets up, somehow gets dressed, and comes out into his store, tucking in his shirt and full of what in the ever-living hell? Because his usually empty store is filled with people. He questions Parker. What are all these people doing here? And she excitedly pulls him towards the TV, where newscaster Rosa Gutierrez is live on the scene at Pottersville Mill, where locals claim to have seen a Bigfoot sighting. It cuts to a guy who professes...
You have to put a couple more R's in Rosa Gutierrez's name, because she said Rosa Gutierrez.
No, she goes to town on her name. She's like, Rosa Gutierrez. Mm-hmm. Live on the scene at Pottersville Mill, where locals claim to have seen a Bigfoot sighting. It cuts to a guy who professes,
well, we were in the woods hanging out when we saw this big, huge, hairy thing go by.
Maynard watches in horror as he flashes back on his drunken rampage in his furry outfit. Next, an elderly couple is being interviewed, and the woman says, "I screamed when I saw him in our backyard chasing a bunny." And her husband takes over. "Then he must have been real thirsty from chasing after that bunny, because he drank directly from our little boy peeing fountain, just tipping his head back and having that little boy pee directly in his mouth." And it literally is this like naked little boy with a spout coming out from between his legs. And I'm like, that is one absolutely just naked little boy peeing fountain.
Those used to be very popular back in the day, and I can't for the life of me figure out why.
Yeah, I was never really into it either. Usually, though, it's like, oh, there's a little boy, and there's like surroundings of like ivy and different shit like that, and it's like a tiered thing. But this was just like a 3 foot tall.
A boy
tall...
and his dong peeing.
Little boy. Naked ass little boy. The sculpture with the pee arc coming out. Yeah. The older man continues, "He looked like half hairy man, half gorilla." And Maynard flashes on the events they described, it all coming back to him. He stiffly says to Parker, "Wow, that's really something. I'll be right back." And heads to the storeroom, swiftly packing up his Bigfoot outfit into a duffel.
He heads outside with that duffel bag and notices that the once desolate town has people milling about it. Maynard makes his way to the packed sheriff's office, and while Tammy, who works at the front desk, tries to get him to come back later, Maynard insists that the sheriff will want to see him. Tammy finally and reluctantly allows him back, but the sheriff is... he is... Jack, a.k.a. the Squirrel Wolf. Maynard takes a seat across him and tries to come clean, but all Jack wants to talk about is how he would never sleep with Connie. It could have been 32 other people upstairs in the room with Connie. He says, "It's all about being a furry. I would never do that to you. You know it could have been 32 other people upstairs in your room with her." Maynard's not consoled by this, but continues trying to confess to being Bigfoot. Except Tammy interrupts by coming in and telling Jack that there's a TV show on the line that needs to talk to him right away. Jack apologizes to May, saying, "I'm sorry I gotta take this, but we're okay, right? I promise I'll never rub the bunny again." He then picks up the phone to talk to the TV show about Bigfoot, quote unquote, and a befuddled Maynard heads back out the door. I can't even imagine this. The sheriff is furry.
Squirrel wolf man.
Squirrel wolf man is... they're not fucking, so...
No.
Rubbing on your bunny? This guy's rubbing on his bunny. And he's the sheriff. That is a shitty situation to be in.
Mm-hmm.
On his way back to the store, Maynard's approached by a couple of dudes who he appears to know, and they excitedly ask if they can sell Bigfoot merch in his store. He distractedly agrees because he then notices Connie briskly walking down the street, and he really wants to talk to her, except Connie doesn't want to talk to him. She's too busy being turned on by the idea of Bigfoot being in town. And suddenly, Maynard sees a way to appeal to his wife. Is it a well-thought-out idea? Absolutely not. Does it somehow attract her to him personally? No. But it is an idea, and it also has added life to his dead town that he'd love to revitalize. So he doesn't confess. He doesn't ditch the suit. Instead, he strategically dons it night after night when he closes a store and politely and non-destructively rampages through town. And Pottersville begins to thrive with the Bigfoot tourism.
Aww.
The town even has a tree lighting ceremony. Oh my God. See, we're dipping right back into the Hallmark well again, Corinne. I see what you're doing here. I see it. One night on his routine Sasquatch trek, Maynard, a.k.a. Bigfoot, Mayfoot. We should probably do a mashup of him. No. How about Bignard?
I've been calling him Maynardfoot throughout the rest of this.
Oh, Maynardfoot it is, although I do kind of like Bignard, but I don't think it really describes.
I think that has other meanings, Tam.
Bignard. Look, it's a Bignard. No. Yeah, it doesn't work. Okay. Bigfoot waves to a little kid looking out the window one night, and the kid happily wishes Bigfoot a Merry Christmas. However, husband Maynard is bombing. One night we see Connie Bunny having another sexual furry session with Raccoon and Squirrel Wolf Jack, even though Jack said he wasn't going to rub his bunny again, but he sure did, because there he is again, once in his wife's bedroom.
They're not having any kind of sex. They're just like...
I know. Well, he said he's not going to rub the bunny. He said he's not going to rub the bunny, Corinne, and yet there he is in the room rubbing the bunny. After he assured Maynard in his office.
They're just socializing.
Oh,
Sure.
Yeah. The raccoon has having like a coffee tea cup. I don't know how the raccoon is drinking said coffee from the coffee cup, but, you know, they're just chatting about Bigfoot.
Okay, sure. If you think that they just get in their costumes to chat and drink coffee, you are sorely mistaken. I think that is a prequel or a postquel to some serious rubbing going on.
Furries, a lot of them, it's not a sexual thing. It's just like a, let's hang out in our, as our furry selves. Because I feel more like like a wolf or a raccoon or whatever.
I think you're giving Jack a lot more credit than he deserves. I think he's a scoundrel that's not honoring his word to his friend. And you are seeing the better side of him. So we'll just have to agree to disagree.
I will say that the Connie Bunny and Jack Squirrel Wolf interaction in the bedroom was highly suspicious, 100%. And the fact that his wife was having this secret life outside of him, also not cool at all. Absolutely.
See, but if you were Jack and you were a good friend, you'd be like, oh, Connie, just want to come over and have coffee and chat about Bigfoot in our furry costumes. I would be like, you know what? No, I don't want Maynard to see me coming or going from your house dressed like this because we already fucked around with his heart and broke it, so I don't want anything to do with that. But no, he goes over there and has coffee with or without his furry costume, I think is irrelevant. I think it's a fucked up thing to do, and I am sticking to it.
Well, Connie, anyways. I mean, she is on a break from her relationship, and she is also, I would say, not the best partner. Does she deserve that? Does she deserve that Victorian house, Tamara?
Oh, fuck no, Connie. You could pack up your shit and see yourself fucking out of this house. Because by golly, if he leaves her the house in the divorce, I'm going to plots myself. Anywho, in the middle of this maybe or maybe not suspicious furry meeting, Connie sees that Maynard's calling on the phone, but she sends him straight to voicemail. Ouch. And regardless of that, the Bigfoot things are going great for Maynard, even though nobody knows it's him, until a helicopter comes to town, arriving in the middle of the square. A couple of patrons pull Maynard excitedly out of his shop to see said helicopter descending into the center of town. People are yelling, Brock, Brock, over here! And Maynard's confused, who's Brock? His friends say, you've never seen his show? Maynard shakes his head and his friend excitedly continues, Brock goes after a different monster every week. The Loch Ness Chupacabra, a Abominable Snowman. He's incredible.
You said a Abominable Snowman. He's got great. This, he's got a six pack.
Yeah. Just then the helicopter door opens and out comes a man dressed in a snowsuit who announces confidently in his best Crocodile Dundee outfit, there's a rumor floating around here there might be a Sasquatch in these.
Instead of accent, you said outfit.
Oh, in his best Crocodile Dundee accent. Accent. Okay, people can't say wolf. I can't say outfit, apparently. Fuck.
You said outfit again.
I know, I can't. I can't say accent. Okay. I literally can't say accent for some reason. It's blocking me. I don't know what is happening. Holy shit. Oh my God, Tamara. Best Crocodile Dundee accent. There's a rumor floating around here. There might be a Sasquatch in these parts. Follow me on Twitter. I can't do an Australian accent. I apologize profusely for that.
No. This is good though. This is perfect because since his outfit, now I'm saying it, since his accent is fake, it doesn't matter how bad we fuck up the Australian accent because he's in and out of it all the time. So we're being accurate.
I know when you were like writing out the script and I kept seeing sip, I was like, why did she keep putting sip? And I'm like, oh, okay, I got you. Because I was like, sip. Oh my, yep. Oh, brilliant, genius.
Yeah, Chef's I wrote kiss. Some stuff out phonetically to help me out with the Australian accent thing because I was like, yes. I'm not going to be able to get into it otherwise. Yeah.
Yes. And I couldn't understand till like halfway through and I'm all sip. Yes, sip. So good. So good.
Brock gathers the very excited town into his hotel lobby and the town shares their Bigfoot sightings. How he's 10 foot tall and roams the region. Brock is impressed and channels the citizens' excited energy into a search party. Did you have something you wanted to say?
I can't believe that these people thought that that was a real Bigfoot because, okay, yes, I watch a lot of Bigfoot shows, apparently now, inexplicably, which is so relevant to this movie. But Bigfoot is in a ghillie suit and a gorilla mask, and he is just like running through the center of town in alleyways and people's backyards going, "Rawr!" Like, Bigfoot is famously reserved and hides in the woods and does not want to be seen, hence why nobody's seen him. And yet people think that he's just like floating into town to what, go grab a drink at the bar before he rampages? Like, doesn't that seem even the slightest bit suspicious to these people? Or they just really want to believe?
Maybe Bigfoot got therapy. Have you ever thought about that? Maybe Bigfoot has actualized himself more and is ready to get out there into that big, bold world.
Fair, what was I thinking? He's finally coming into himself and ready to mingle. And yeah. I am just shaming him, and I apologize. I am so sorry about that. Yeah.
Now we'll see if you ever see Bigfoot after a statement like that.
I know, of course, he's going to listen to this episode and be like, "That bitch, I'm really working on myself. I don't know what the fuck she wants from me.
I don't feel safe in her presence." Yes.
Yeah. She's just going to shame me for trying to come out and just be myself around other people.
Yes. It's okay, Bigfoot. I've got your back. Don't you worry.
Yeah. Yeah. Just next time you email us, just make sure it's addressed strictly to Corinne, not me, because I just don't understand you.
Everybody gathers at the edge of town right next to the woods, and Brock, along with his camera crew and about 30 people, start to search the woods until the search is stopped by someone blowing on their whistle, which the sheriff told everyone very firmly was supposed to be used only if they see something, as it is not a toy. That whistle is not a toy, Tamara. Not a toy.
No.
Beep. Hey, not a toy.
I'm playing with my whistle and I don't care. I don't care.
The stoner, Jasper, from earlier has alerted everyone, and they gather round a dead deer.
Not a Sasquatch. That's not a Sasquatch.
No, it is not a Sasquatch.
A dead deer, not a Sasquatch.
You are correct. It is a dead deer. And while the Sheriff Jack is busy berating Jasper for calling everyone over to a dead deer, Brock has a look on his face. If he were following Joey Tribbiani's school of acting, he'd be pretending like he just smelled a fart. But no, no, Brock is using his mad skills as a chupacabra hunter to suss out what is going on. He squats in front of the deer, announcing, White, look here.
Your Australian accent's better than mine, and I love how you phonetically wrote out, white, Luke here.
That's wait, look here.
Yeah. If you need an interpreter, I can be your Australian accent interpreter.
That's because I wrote it out phonetically. He puts on his glasses, closely inspecting the deer, and declares, "See how the leg is snipped? Only a squatch would do that." Bart the poacher pushes his way to the front of the group and says, "Or a hole. The deer probably stepped in a hole, broke his leg, and died of exposure." Brock stands up and definitively states, "For your information. That's not...
What the hell? You know all those French Australians. Yeah.
We're going in and out of accents here.
Their accent gets a little muddled from time to time.
"For your information, this type of injury is mostly seen amongst the deer of the Mount Tambourine region of Queensland."
Which I had to look up to see if there were actually deer in Australia, because I was like, and if there was a Mount Tambourine region of Queensland as well, because I was like, how full of shit is this guy? And deer actually were brought into Australia and now are considered great pests throughout the land, and there is a Mount Tambourine region of Queensland which has deer in it.
Do you by chance know why the deer were brought into Australia? Just out of
by the Brits, who thought, you know what would be great? Let's go deer hunting in Australia. You know what we should do to go deer hunting in Australia? Bring deer into Australia so that we can hunt them.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, those Brits. They sure do revere and love the lands that they go into, and definitely don't fuck around with the habitats or flora and fauna or people.
Exactly. Yeah. Why would we hunt native species when we could bring in another species to hunt? Sounds like a grand idea.
And Australia is just like chock full of not that I'm saying you should hunt them, but by golly, their animals there are just something else. But no, not good enough. Let's bring in the deer too. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
There are kangaroos and koalas and platypuses.
Yes.
Fucking big ass spiders that'll never make me visit that place because I hate spiders.
I did not know that. Australian listeners, I'm sorry. We will never go to Australia because Tamara can't deal with spiders. Blame her. I might go without her, though, and I'll just bring a Tamara sock puppet. It'll be fine. Don't worry. Don't tell Tamara, though.
Probably a better show than what we're doing right now. Absolutely. I say that sarcastically, Corinne.
So, this type of injury is most seen amongst the deer in the Mount Tambourine region of Queensland, caused by the Australian Yowie.
Ooh.
The camera does a slow zoom in on Brock's face as Bart, positioned right behind his shoulder, looks on with a, "Is this guy for real? What an asshole," look on his face. Brock continues, "I've heard of rare instances where it's been done by its North American cousin, the Bigfoot, but I've never seen it before with my own eyes until right now. Oh yeah, this was definitely a squatch."
The mysterious "I smell farts" look drops from his face and he addresses the camera operator.
"Spike, can we do one more take for the promo?" Brock kneels in front of the deer and springs up to his feet, ripping off his glasses and declaring, "There's definitely a squatch in these woods."
He does this several times, and once he's satisfied, he says to the crowd,
"Great, now where can a bloke get a Foster's around here?"
The crowd is puzzled, and Brock explains, "You know, Foster's, Australian for beer." Should have been your first clue that he's not Australian, because most Australians hate Foster's.
I was like, oh, that's not trying too hard there or anything like that.
Yes. I'm surprised he didn't also ask where he can get some shrimps on the bobby, because they also don't call them shrimps. They call them prawns in Australia, the land down under. So I've heard.
Okay. Apparently, Tam is an Aussie expert, even though she insists that she will never go there.
Well, every time I come across anybody from Australia, I pepper them with those important questions. Do you like Foster's? Do they really say shrimp on the barbie? How many spiders are there, actually?
You've seen too many of those posts that show, like, entire towns, like, covered in spider webs, and you're like,
oh, nightmare. Nightmare fuel. Oh, my God. No. No. Can you imagine? Jesus Christ. Just,
No, I think that's super creepy, too. But I don't think that that's happening in Melbourne. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Happy place, find your happy place, rocking back and forth and finding your happy place.
Why don't you just crack open a Foster's?
Because it is 10 o'clock in the morning, Corinne, and I have some cooking to do in a little bit, although we did get all the fixings to make some spiked cocoa, so I might have that in a little bit once we're done.
Ooh, nice. The crowd happily realizes, drinks! And once they hear beer, and for some reasons, they head to Maynard's store instead of a bar. However, as much as Bart believes that Brock is full of shit drinking, he can definitely get behind.
Back at Maynard's store, Brock is holding court. He has half the townspeople's rapt attention and is explaining the next step in the hunt is to go into the woods by himself at night to track the beast. Connie looks on excitedly and asks, do you ever dress up as some of the animals you're hunting? Brock admits no, but it's not a bad idea. Then he poorly flirts with her, calling her a mermaid. Connie blushes and Maynard looks incredibly uncomfortable, but still tries approaching his wife because he is relentless. But she brushes him off, hissing, Brock is about to sing us a song! And can we loosely call it a song, perhaps? Brock's assistant whips a guitar out for him and he opens with, This is dedicated to Nelson Mandela. Sorry, always chokes me up. He starts plunking away at the guitar, singing not about apartheid, Black Lives Matter, any other kind of social justice matter. No, no. This is about his quest to find Bigfoot. Across the water lines, in water and bridge, like a bird without its... Mariah Carey, this...
No.
Like a bird without its... Wee! Hey! Hey! I apologize for that. But Corinne wrote in her script that I got a Mariah Carey the shit out of Wings. So there you go. That's my Mariah Carey the shit out of Wings in that song. Maybe I should have put a disclaimer to lower the volume before you get to that part. But it's neither here nor there. Back to the story.
Hey, I say it was an accurate to the song. So,
yeah, that's, oh, God. Everybody's digging the song except for Maynard and Parker. Parker, because I believe she thinks Brock is a full of shit asshole. And Maynard, because in this moment, he's dying inside as Connie's soft smile and heart eyes are being directed at Brock. Brock, mid-song about his Yeti, cuts himself off, assuring everyone that there's a lot more verses, but he doesn't want to bore anyone. Instead, he has a poem about the chupacabra to share to spice things up. But before he can launch into it, Bart, who is sitting in the back of the room near Maynard and Parker, scratches his fingers on the chalkboard, and drunkenly calls out to Brock and the town, "You know who I am and what I do." Well, first he gets everybody's attention, and then drunkenly calls out to Brock and the town, "You know what I, you know who I am and what I do. And sure, you can all fawn all over this guy and get 5 minutes of fame on TV, or you can get our town lasting fame by capturing the Bigfoot, Squatch, Yeti, or whatever you want to call it. It's not going to be easy. I like catching a squirrel." We cut to squirrel slash wolf sheriff Jack's face. "Or a cute little bunny rabbit." Then we cut to bunny Connie's face. "But I'll find him, catch him, and the town will be flooded with tourists." Sheriff Jack responds, "Gee, thanks, Bart. We'll take that into consideration." And everyone turns back towards Brock, enraptured. And Larry, who was watching this with me at the time, informed me that that little scene was a reference to Jaws.
Oh.
Like verbatim. In Jaws, when they're talking about what they're going to do about the shark, one of the fishermen scratches his hands across a chalkboard to get the town meeting's attention and then almost says exactly that same thing.
That's awesome.
"You know who I am and what I do," and then blah, 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 blah. I know. He was like, "Oh, do you know where that's from?" And I'm like, "Pottersville right now?" And he goes, "Yeah, no, that's from Jaws." And I'm like, then he showed me the clip and I was like, "Well, son of a bitch, look at that."
That's awesome. I like it when there are references within movies to other movies.
And I know, there's that one. And I was like, what else did we miss? Because there's a reference to Jaws and then there's a reference to It's a Wonderful Life later on.
I just know that upon watching this time around, I actually believe that Bart set a trap for Connie Bunny, because I believe he knew what was going on and he wanted Maynard to know.
Yeah, I bet you're right, because he likes Maynard a lot and it seems like he really cares about him and wants the best for him.
Yeah, and so when he was like, "It's not like catching a squirrel," and it's like, zoop, Jack's mm-hmm. face, or a
or
bunny.
A bunny.
Zoop,
Connie.
Connie's face, yeah. He's like, "I got you. I got my eyes on you and you done."
Yes. You think it was a mistake that I talked Maynard into going home to live some life with his wife? No, that was intentional, biatch.
Later, Maynard drives over to his and Connie's house and he sits in his VW microbus and practices confessing to Connie that he's Bigfoot and that now there's a lot of pressure on him, but he did it for her in the town. But instead of going in to talk to her, he returns back to his shop, puts a few cosmetic upgrades into his Bigfoot outfit, studies a few books on Bigfoot behavior, and then goes out to the woods where Brock's show, Monster Finder, is filming. Maynard watches Brock prepare to film and sees what a righteous asshole Brock is. Oh, he's such a fucker. Finally, Brock starts recording and shows two sticks to the camera. "The North American Squatch is drawn to wood because of the sip," that sap. "The Squatch feeds off the wood sip to feed its gigantic libido." He starts clicking the two pieces of wood together, calling, "Here, Squatchy Squatchy, got lots of delicious sip for you. Click, 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 click." One of his crew is at a nearby bush and shakes the bush, making it rustle. Brock stops quickly, pulling his night vision binoculars out and scanning the scenery. He crouches in the front of the camera, tucking the binoculars into his pocket and explaining that the Squatch is inclined to mimic us, his human cousin. "So let's see if it'll mimic me." He claps a couple of times, and Maynard, dressed in full Bigfoot gear, watches from behind some trees. Brock claps again, and Maynard Foot claps back. His crew member who shook the bush moments ago was confused because that's not him. Brock pulls out his selfie stick for dramatic selfie video and once again explains, "Now I will try to communicate with the Squatch," he bellows. "Oh!" And Maynard responds, "Rawr!" Brock gets on his walkie and says, "Wilkins, that was your best work ever, but you're too close. Can you tone it down like 50%? Wilkins walkies back. "That wasn't me. I think there's something out there." And suddenly Maynard Foot goes running by Wilson and then goes running up to the crew, raising his arms and roaring. "Rawr!" And Brock freaks the fuck out, giving us some very Blair Witch footage vibes, camera moments. And everyone scatters, leaving a very disappointed Maynard Foot behind, declaring, "I don't think they got their picture."
Oh, so we're not going with Big Nard? No. No Big Nard.
Maybe a mistake on my part to not go by Big Nard. I just think of a giant penis running around in the woods.
Would that be accepted into the furry family if it was a big penis and not exactly furry in the costume?
It needs to have fur. But also, I got to say that this movie was filmed in winter in some place that is cold. Everybody is freezing their ass off throughout this entire movie unless they're indoors. There is snow everywhere and not the fake Hallmark kind, which is felt or bubbles. And
yeah,
they are blanched of all color in their face when they're outside because it's so damn fucking cold everywhere.
Big Nard.
Big Nard. If it was a Big Nard, it wouldn't be that big because it would be so cold it would be shrunken down into a teensy Nard.
A teensy Nard. It would be down to like a middle to below average Nard.
It'd be an innie Nard. It wouldn't be an outie Nard.
No. Yes. Yes. But once it gets back into the, you know, store or house or whatever where there's actual heat, he's back.
Bam. Bigger than ever. Thick, hard, firm. Nard. Yes.
It was cold out here. Like that episode of Seinfeld.
Exactly.
I just got out of the pool. Back at the hotel, Brock is throwing everything into his suitcase. He's not into real Bigfoot. He prefers a Monsters of the Week cosplay, thank you very much. However, before he can hoof it out of Dodge, his manager Eileen stops him. She's been by his side throughout this movie, smiling at him, handing him his guitar, soothing his ego, and this moment is no exception. "Wait, wait! We have an opportunity here and you can drop the accent. It's just me." Brock visibly relaxes, but he's not happy about sticking around. "I did not sign up for real monsters. We need to go." Eileen stops him saying, "Hold on. I've spoken to the network, and if we capture Bigfoot, this could be really big." But Brock isn't having it. He argues, "The show barely ranks over Family Feud. It's not worth it." Eileen presses, "Right, right. But if we work with Mr. Fingernails on the Chalkboard Hunter guy and actually capture Bigfoot, this could really catapult us to fame." Brock looks at her hopefully. "And then I'd be so famous I could be in a movie instead of the shitty show?" Eileen smiles at him, assuring him, "Absolutely!" But her eyes are saying, "You're right, buddy." And her head is shaking. However, Brock is too self-involved to notice, and he excitedly agrees with the crikey.
Oh, you're so Australian, Brock.
So then, Sheriff Squirrel Wolf Jack, Eileen and Brock all go out to Bart, the Chalkboard Hunter fingernail guy, and eventually Bart agrees to help them capture, but the terms are $5,000 for him to help them out to get to Bigfoot and $10,000 for catching Bigfoot, which is also a reference to Jaws because in Jaws the fisherman says he'd catch the shark for $5,000 but kill it for $10,000. Thanks, Larry. They have to do things his way, and it's just gotta be Brock and the sheriff that are going. No film crew and no Eileen. Eileen has to restrain herself from doing a happy dance that she doesn't have to tromp around outside in the very, very, very cold woods. And Brock balks at not having his support staff with him, but is comforted by the fact that at least the sheriff's going. Bart packs up his truck with various supplies, backpacks, tents, and tranquilizer guns, and now we're going to find out what Brock is really made of. It's time for him to suck things up and put on his big boy pants.
Woo!
Good times. Meanwhile, back at Maynard's store, the town seems to be falling apart. Customers being rude and people who are hanging out getting into fights over who's seen Bigfoot more times. The Bigfoot merchandise guys comes into the store and lets Maynard know that this Bigfoot thing may soon be over because Bart is on the case. Maynard's brain hamster starts running on the wheel, trying to figure out the implications of this and how to gracefully resolve the situation. Parker is over the whole Bigfoot sitch. She breaks up the senior lady's verbal altercation and chats with Maynard as he stocks some canned goods. She says quietly to him, "I'm going to be so glad when whoever's dressing up as Bigfoot is done." Maynard's confused. "You don't think he's real?" Parker scoffs. "Bigfoot likes his alone time. He quietly hides in the wood. He wouldn't be trolling through town, scraping along, making a big show of things. It's not like he's gotten therapy or anything." She actually says, "Please, I don't believe in Bigfoot, and right now it's ruining our town." Maynard responds, "But it's given our town hope." Parker smiles at Maynard because he's such a softy. Maynard asks, "So if it's not really Bigfoot, but some guy, what do you think will happen to him if they catch him?" Parker matter-of-factly states, "Knowing Bart, stuff him and hang his head on the wall." Maynard gulps, and Parker walks off to help a customer. Night has fallen, and Bart, Jack, and Brock are stationed at their campsite. Bart has started a fire, and Brock is several feet away, doing a camera confessional. He says into his night vision camera, "For the first time in Monster Finder history, I'm completely alone, aided only by a local sheriff for legal reasons and a local guide." And so, by completely alone, he means with two other people. Okay. Is that how you define completely alone?
Depends on the two people I'm with, honestly.
All by myself. No, you two don't count because I don't really like you very much.
All by myself. And you talk incessantly for 45 minutes about yourself and I just tune you out.
Anymore. Yes, exactly. Brock calls out to the twosome over by the campfire. "Now prepare yourselves and watch as I communicate with the Squatch." Bart raises an eyebrow, takes a swig of his moonshine, says, "Sure, Jan," and watches dubiously as Brock cups his hands under the lower part of his mouth and half howls, half yodels. Bart scoffs. "Why are you yodeling?" Brock calls back, "I'm not yodeling, it's mating call to the Squatch." Bart notes to Jack, "So he wants the Bigfoot to fuck him?" Just then, there's a howl in the distance, and Brock triumphantly states to the camera, "The Squatch has responded." However, Bart ruins the moment by yelling, "It's a coyote!" And Brock swiftly pivots, whispering confidently to the camera, "That howl was a Squatch pretending to be a coyote. It's what the Squatch does." But
when it's not pretending to be a big giant penis.
But it's cold outside, so it's a really tiny penis instead. But
my moderately sized penis, sorry. Yeah.
But Jack and Bart agree it's a coyote. Brock moves back to the campfire, pulls out his guitar, declaring that he's going to lure the Bigfoot with his gift of song. It will appeal to the Squatch's humanity. He then begins atonally, "Oh, yeah," all over the place. Bart claps Brock on the shoulder, at least temporarily stopping the singing. And Bart assures Brock, "Don't worry, we're not going to miss out on anything. I've laid bait and a tripwire all around us, so we'll know when this guy is coming." And Bart heads into the tent to get a little sleep before the action starts.
At Maynard's store, he sadly counts the deposit for the end of the day as he puzzles over what in the heck to do about Bart. His brain hamster has yet to help it out on this one, regardless of how it had been working away on the wheel since this afternoon when it found out. Picture those TikTok videos where the hamster's going on the wheel, then loses its footing and starts whipping around the wheel. That's what's happening internally. Parker sees that he's kind of out of it and offers to drop off the deposit for him. He agrees and she goes into the office to get the deposit bag. However, she doesn't immediately find it and instead runs across Maynard's Bigfoot costume.
She looks at it in horror and backs away. Before regaining her composure, she finally finds the deposit bag and heads back into the main part of the store to get the till money from Maynard. However, now she looks at him with a curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal eyes, but doesn't confront him about anything. Everything's totally cool, nothing to see here. So she gets the money and goes. Later that evening, on Squatch Hunt Camping Trip. Squatch sounds like a reality game show. Later that evening on Squatch Hunt Camping Trip. The three men are sleeping in the tent together, or at least Jack and Bart are. Both of them are from the hardy, woodsy, we hunt like this all the time stock.
And Brock with his highlights is scared.
Yes, Brock and his highlights are terrified. And scared, and probably ridiculously cold and not able to sleep. Suddenly, there's a snapping sound, and the three men sit up. Could that be their captured Squatch? Bart hands Brock a trank gun and says, "If you see the Squatch, shoot!" And the men rush off to find the trap that got sprung. Brock is, of course, taping a show on his camera, and he hears a rustling and shoots first, asking questions later. He hears a thud, and Brock is thrilled because he hit his target! Or did he?
What would be the worst thing that you could possibly find in the woods that you'd have to shoot with the Trank gun, Corinne?
I mean, worst thing? A serial killer, obviously.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I'd be okay with shooting a serial killer with the Trank gun. If I saw you in the forest and somebody's like, shoot Corinne with the Trank gun, I'd be like, no. She's my friend and I'm not going to do it.
I appreciate that.
That would probably be my worst case scenario. I wouldn't want to shoot you with the Trank gun.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So the oopsie, I done fucked up Trank gun shooting. Yeah, that would be like my parents.
Dad, I know your heart stopped, but let me just help you out with like traumatizing you a little bit more.
I know you have a pacemaker, so you're going to be good. You're going to be good.
Mom, I thought you needed a break, so I went ahead and tranked you because you've been going through a lot lately.
Yes.
And you wouldn't slow down, so my hand was forced.
Get some really good sleep. Really good sleep.
Really good sleep. Really 6 to 8 hours. Anywho, find out with us after this break. And we're back. Brock, on the other hand, hit. Not the Squatch. Not Maynard. Not Bart. But Jack, the sheriff, wah, wah, wah. I shot the sheriff, but I didn't shoot the deputy. Okay, Corinne, can you sing that song with your Australian accent?
I don't know if that's possible.
I shot the sheriff, but I did not shoot the deputy. Oh.
Beautiful.
My day's been made. But fortunately, Jack's just been tranked and will eventually come back around.
And I want to be clear, gentle listeners, neither of us thinks our accents are good. We are not.
No.
But part of the brilliance of the bad Australian accents on our part is that Brock's Australian accent is bad as well. So.
Right.
Because it's as fake as ours is.
Yes, we know and we acknowledge our terrible fake Australian accents, but it also is tickling us immensely, so we'll allow it.
Day 2 of Squatch Hunt, and Brock has already taken a dump in the woods, talked to his manager while doing it, letting her know he was shitting while talking to her, and realized he had nothing to wipe with. Also, don't let your manager know that you're shitting while talking to them. You can let your best friend know if you have that kind of a relationship. But not your boss person or like somebody you have a, you know, business type relationship with, FYI.
Yes, okay. Corinne knows that I frequently poop before we podcast. It's my pre-podcasting poop. And sometimes I talk to her while I'm doing it. But we're just close like that and have known each other since we were 2. So it's perfectly acceptable.
Yes. Bart, who finds Brock taking a dump in the woods, grabs Brock's phone and throws it into said woods, and by the time night has fallen again, Jack has finally come round from his trank gun stupor. Brock is sulking, and Bart is about as surprised at the unfolding of the events as a Catholic is to receive communion on Sunday. I couldn't think of anything better to say at the time. If you have something better to say, Tam, I am well open to it.
No, when I read that, I paused a beat and I was like, what could I say? No, I think we should just leave it.
Absolutely.
The trio hangs around the campfire and gets drunk. Yes, that's right. Brock is hitting that moonshine pretty hard and sharing about how he believes that Bigfoot is an alien that has been dropped and left on this planet for a punishment for his crimes.
What did Larry think about that theory?
He also thinks that possibly Bigfoot is an alien. He's not like a, oh, Bigfoot's totally an alien. He's just like, well, it would make sense. He's very open-minded when it comes to that stuff. Because he's like, could it be somebody from a different dimension? Could it be any alien? And that's why we don't see him, because they're just here like tromping around and then they fly back to their planet and report back on what they saw. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of thing.
Meanwhile, back at Maynard's store, Parker tries to get Jack to hang out with her. She's very upset at the whole discovery that Maynard is Bigfoot. However, Maynard assures her, no, I'm Big Nard. And
not and Bigfoot. It's warm in here, so I am for sure Big Nard.
Yes. Firm, hard, ready for your touch. Maynard turns down Parker's offer to hang out, but does hand her the deposit to take to the bank and asks her for a rain check. She heads out walking down the snowy, desolate street, and Maynard retreats to the storeroom where he has a desk and he types out a letter. Parker keeps on walking down the street but feels compelled to turn around and go back to the store. She bursts in saying, May, I know your secret. May? But nothing. She goes into the storeroom and he's not there. However, there's a letter left in a typewriter. She wordlessly reads it, a tear rolling down her cheek.
Back in the woods, the trio hear a sound. Not a coyote, but animal sounding in nature. Banner riding, Corinne.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Both Bart and Brock are intrigued, and Jack actually knows the sound. He tries to stop the guys from seeking it out, but it's futile. Ultimately, the trio stumble onto a furry gathering in the woods. It's their first Bigfoot gathering, and they're so excited! And man, they got a setup. They got like a fucking gazebo kind of thing situation with lights strung up on it, and wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of
it's
times...
It's like a good party.
Where I've seen furries, I've seen pictures of them at like conventions, furry conventions, and I think, boy, those outfits must be really hot and uncomfortable, but here they are out in the snowy woods, and I'm like, this is perfect furry gathering territory. You're in this, like, heavy-ass outfit that's, like, super hot, and you're in this, like, really cold environment, so you're going to have, like, you're going to be wearing the perfect outfit for the climate. So I think that this kind of party is perfect furry fodder.
Yes, it is perfect furry fodder, but Bart breaks it up because they got some serious hunting to do and the only bipedal furry being they want to see out there is a Sasquatch. Now get! Jack, in the heat of the moment, confesses to being a furry and proud. And Connie, who is of course there in her bunny suit, and in the heat of the moment of an entirely different kind, tilts her bunny head up, exposing her face, and says flirtatiously to Brock that he should join them sometime. Winky winky.
Ugh.
Once Bart has gotten the party to disperse, they head back to camp. Bart is pissed at Jack and Brock for being more interested in the furry party than hunting, but then Bart sniffs the air and orders Brock, hey, do your television thing, Brock asks confused. What thing? And Bart says snidely, that howling, yodeling thing you do, and then dashes off into the woods, tarp and gun in hand. Brock grabs the sticks with a sip and hands the camera over to Jack to record him. Brock clicks his sip sticks together, and Maynard Foot, a.k.a. Big Nard, a.k.a. slightly smaller Nard because it's cold, clicks him back. Brock pursues the noise, excitedly whispering to the camera, he's out there. He's definitely out there. Brock then claps his hand. Maynard Foot, a little closer now, claps back. Bart, hearing all of this, has pinpointed the Squatch's position and approaches him from the rear, while Brock cups his hands under his mouth. Ow! Oof! Bark has his sights on Maynard Foot, whispers under his breath, sorry, and tranks him, quickly covering him with a tarp. Brock finds Bart and the tarp and excitedly says, did I get him? Bort sighs, yeah, you got them all right. And they load up the tarped Maynard Foot and drive back into town with Brock yelling victoriously out the window the entire way, we got him! We got Bigfoot! I don't think I would not look under the tarp if I was Brock, but that's just me. I would be like all up in there wanting to see the fucking elusive cryptid that everyone's been hunting and searching for years, but apparently Brock doesn't feel the same.
Well, I think that Bart laid down some boundaries. I think he was just like, you gotta leave it alone. We just need to get in the back of the truck. The timing's of importance, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Although in a lot of the shows that I've watched about Bigfoot, they say that Bigfoot stinks like the Dickens. And I'm like, why would Bigfoot be so stinky? I don't understand. Like, a bear's not generally stinky. And they're kind of like the same fur quality and height and build, I guess. So I just, maybe that's why he didn't look under the tarp. Maybe.
But do bears have armpits? No, bears do not have armpits.
Yes, they do. Kind of. In a sort of default way.
Uh-huh.
They have little paws and arms, and there's a little part underneath their paws and arms that touch the body that probably gets sweaty and hot.
I just see that you think that Bigfoot apparently has like spa weekends and, you know, has his like deodorant that he uses.
Spa weekends. I'm not saying spa weekends. I'm just saying like most big furry animals don't emit a smell. So I don't understand why Sasquatch many times is described as being stinky. Because, I mean, they have access to water.
How do you know? Have you, like, been hanging out with bears up close and personal?
No. But nobody ever says, like, oh, yeah, I went bear hunting. And God, those fuckers stink. But they do generally say that about Sasquatches. Like, we thought we saw a Sasquatch and there is a stench and odor, yada, yada, yada. Anyways, that's just neither here nor there. I'm just bringing it up.
Okay. And I have to say, most of the time, bears smell clean and fresh. A high compliment would be to say someone has bear breath. People who actually smell bear breath usually say it has no odor.
What? Where are you reading that from?
The internet. And the internet does not lie.
Of course. Of course it must be the truth then. What does it say about stinky Bigfoots? Hmm?
We can't reliably say anything about stinky Bigfoots. We can only address what we have in front of us.
You go ahead and read your part, and I'm going to look up stinky Bigfoots.
Great. So, the truck parks in town, and people are gathered outside as Brock holds court, announcing to those gathered that he has done what no one else could and captured Bigfoot. He pulls back the tarp, revealing Maynard Foot, and the crowd gasps. And maybe everything would have been fine, but Parker breaks through the crowd shouting, Maynard, Maynard, are you okay? She springs into the back of the van, back of the truck towards Maynard Foot and asks Brock, horrified, what did you do to him? Brock says, only what I set out to do, capture the elusive beast. However, Bart whispers from the side of the truck to Parker, don't worry, he's okay. I've only tranked him. Parker yells at the gathered people, this isn't Bigfoot, this is Maynard from the general store. She pulls off his gorilla mask and the crowd gasps once again, disappointed. Brock, of course, throws a fit and tells everyone that's gathered round, I'm going to sue y'all. Your town has made a fool of me with its fakery. Like your fake accent. Maynard blearily comes to in the back of the truck and sees Connie Bunny saying to her, cute little bunny, can I come by and visit you? Connie Bunny snatches off her bunny head and angrily responds, yeah, I want you to come by so you can get all your stuff and leave forever. And this is where I think of Tamara having a fit because she thinks about Connie living in that Victorian and kicking out Maynard. And I wonder, like, if she's like, Connie doesn't deserve to live here. And she, like, yelled and threw popcorn at the screen or whatever.
Uh-huh. And I would encourage Maynard to come to and be like, no, no, how about I come back and then you get all your shit and you leave? Huh? I haven't seen Connie do one lick of work, so I'm sure that that house is probably in Maynard's family, just like the store. So she just needs to get on and fucking get the fuck out of that house and let Tamara live in there.
Is really the key. Let Tamara live there instead. Yeah. Yes.
Well, selflessly. I'm just...
You're very selfless, so and I love that about you.
Thank you.
you're willing to live in you know, oh, do you need a 2 to 3 story Victorian classic house to be occupied? I can do that for you. That's what you say. And
yes,
your big heart is.
Yes.
Yes. Evident.
Yes. It's so funny because when I used to walk Melody around my old neighborhood in Hollywood, there was this one house that had like a do not enter whatever, like eviction notices all around it. And it was empty for quite a few months. And then all of a sudden, like cars were mysteriously parked in front of it. And it was evidently lived in, but the eviction signs were still on the door. And I'm like, I wonder if these people are squatters. And if nobody's using the house and they're not like messing anything around in there, I don't mind like a squatter per se. But I'm like, are there any other unused houses around here that maybe need a person living in it rent free? Asking for a friend.
You're noble. You are very noble.
I houses need to be lived in, and I'm the one willing to do that.
I like how you're just willing to throw yourself on the sword at any moment for that cause. And I appreciate that about you.
Thank you. Well, it comes from living in a very congested part of Anaheim in a very small apartment with 50,000 neighbors. I want room to roam.
And Tamara wants room to roam. And so do the people of Pottersville, because they are roaming away from Maynard.
Hmm.
Uh-huh. There is serious fallout from the Maynard Foot debacle. The town is pissed. They feel like they've been made a fool of. Maynard has moved out of his beautiful Victorian, leaving it all to Connie, and is packing up his store. As he's putting away the ornaments on his Christmas tree, news reporter Stacy Gutierrez comes through the door, but we don't see why she's there because we cut to Parker in the lobby of the local hotel talking to residents that are pissed at Maynard. She reminds them, Maynard cares a lot about this town and he has done so much for its people, but what have you given him in return? Nothing. You know what he's doing right now? Packing up his store because he doesn't know what to do. He's done so much to keep this town afloat that I don't know if he could keep his store open even if he wanted to. Parker pulls out Maynard's ledger, the one where he kept track of people and the groceries they bought on credit with him. You all know what this book is for. At one time or another, when you were down on your luck, each and every one of you asked Maynard to put your name in this book. The gathered townsfolk look at Parker with sad eyes. Parker continues, has he ever asked any of you to pay him back? They all shake their heads, and she says, now, before all of you decide to stay mad at Maynard for pretending, I want you all to look at this book and then decide how you feel about him. She opens the ledger up to the room, like she's showing kids pictures in a picture book at story time. But the ledger is by far less interesting because it's completely blank. He never recorded a single name or amount.
Oh my God, how in the world did he stay in business? Wow.
Yeah.
Mm. Breaking news. Breaking news. An anchor solemnly states, and now we go live to Stacy Gutierrez for a story you'll only find here on Channel 13 News. And where is Stacy Gutierrez? Why, she's in Maynard's store standing next to him as she says, this is Stacy Gutierrez.
You were doing so good.
I know, because you said, and where is Stacy? And I just decided to add the Gutierrez, and then I didn't know that you were going to put Stacy Gutierrez in the dialogue. And I was like, okay, Tamara, you're rolling your R's to Jesus right now. Ugh. This is Stacy Gutierrez, reporting live for Channel 13 in Pottersville on Christmas Eve, but not all is merry and bright, as the town is reeling from the Bigfoot hoax. And I am here with Maynard Greger to get his side of the story. So, Maynard, why did you do it? Maynard looks sadly down and says, I never meant for any of this to happen, but when people started thinking I was Bigfoot, and it made them happy, I thought, why not? People everywhere are looking for something to believe, and our town has fallen on hard times, like a lot of other towns, and Bigfoot brought a bit of magic and hope back to Pottersville. This sense that something else was out there really brought the town together and gave everybody the faith and the hope that things were going to be okay. Hope isn't always the most realistic thing, but it tends to make the world a better place. Stacy wraps up the news story and thanks Maynard for the interview. She's about to leave when Parker comes and approaches Maynard, who's behind the shop counter, and she's followed by many townsfolk. Parker places the empty ledger on the counter, and the two guys who sold Squatch merch out of his store approach. They thank him for letting him sell their stuff because he didn't get a cut of any of that shit, which is BS, and leave some cash on the counter and sign their names in the ledger. Townspeople after townspeople sign the ledger, leaving cash on the counter for Maynard, telling him how important he is, how much they value him, and how sorry they were for being shitty to him. Parker, standing off to the side, says to Maynard, "You thought you needed to dress as Bigfoot to save this town, but you saved it just by being you a long time ago."
Aww.
Connie, who has seen the news story, comes in through the front door and beelines it over to Maynard. She looks at him with enthusiastic heart eyes, and Parker looks on a little appalled, but does not intervene. Connie tells Maynard in her best baby voice, "Why don't you close up this itsy-witsy store and come home to me?" Maynard looks at her and says, "You were right. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while now, and it's been to tell you that you should go and do your own thing. Life is short, and you should pursue what makes you happy. You were right, we should split up." Connie looks taken aback. This is not what she thought he was going to say. She sputters, "Is this, I mean, are you breaking up with me?" Maynard says, "Yep." And Connie swiftly retreats in a huff. In a huff! Meanwhile, Parker looks happy as a clam, and people keep coming up to the counter and throwing down a bit of cash and writing in the ledger. And as soon as Connie leaves, Maynard leans over to the side counter to Parker and asks, "Hey, Parker, is that offer to hang out still open?" Parker smiles softly at Maynard, looking at him with heart eyes, and says, "Always." Sheriff Squirrel Wolf Jack has somehow found a beer and toasts Maynard, hoisting the bottle and saying, "The richest man in Pottersville," and everyone in the store, "Hear, hear," is back. And much to Maynard's credit, his brain hamster has been churning on a resolution to the Bigfoot issue this entire time, and he has a plan. Woo. And before we go to that plan, this little section that I just read was a huge nod to It's a Wonderful Life.
Ah, so that part, yeah.
Mimics It's a Wonderful Life, because George Bailey has helped the town much like Maynard and has shelled out shekels to keep people in their homes. And then when he's in dire straits, the town rallies around him and all pay him back in a sense so that he can keep his business open. So nice little to It's a Wonderful Life nod there.
Yay!
But back to the movie. There is another exclusive Channel 13 expose that Brock from Monster Finder is actually named Leonard Abramowitz from Coney Island, which is nowhere near Australia, much like his accent. And then Parker and Maynard, due to their realization about how many people love Bigfoot, get a loan to revitalize the town mill and convert it to a Bigfoot Museum. Bart looks on approval over the whole thing while Parker and Maynard kiss in front of their investment, and then off in the distance a roar is heard. Could it be? But we'll never know, as that's when the movie ends. The end.
Well, what they need to do is grab two sticks, you know, with lots of sit, so that they can clack it together.
I don't think Bigfoot likes sip. I don't know where that came from. To keep his libido. Sip. Sip is for the libido. So does that mean it's like a... I mean, if we're Bigfoot's cousin, then theoretically, if you eat maple syrup, it might help your libido, I guess. Guys out there, can you test that theory for me?
Who needs Viagra when you have syrup?
Mm-hmm. And sip. When you have sip. Yes. So, Corinne, what do you give Pottersville? How many dry kisses?
I love this movie. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I like movies that have, like, a little bit of oddness to them, which Hallmark movies do not. But like, the ones that are, like, favorite spaces in my heart are, like, Lars and the Real Girl and, like, Pottersville, where... it's just got some random stuff going on in it. So I give this an enthusiastic 4 dry kisses. It's not very diverse. It does have some diversity in it, but none of like the key main characters are anything but white.
So.
Bigfoot was brownish. So there's that.
Bigfoot in this movie and not real. Shh. Secrets.
Oh, yeah. And I guess he wasn't brown. I guess he was gilly covered.
Yeah.
Gilly covered. So it was like a greenish, muddled brown. Yep. Yeah. I guess that doesn't count. Does not count.
But I love the quirkiness of it. I think it's got a really touching storyline. And I love how Maynard turns his life around and gets the girl. And it's got a lot of really great actors in it. You know, and they give great performances. So I give this 4 Dracula kisses. What do you give this, Tamara?
I know. It is a pretty, like, star-studded cast. Yeah. I was, like, surprised. And I was like, oh, my God. Ron motherfucking Perlman. When he took off his wolf squirrel head, I was like, oh, shit. Ron Perlman. What do you know? Anyways, I did enjoy this movie a lot. It definitely is quirky. I 100% agree with you on that. I'm going to give it a similar rating to you, except I'm going to give it 3 3/4 dry kisses. Uh-oh. I'm going to knock it down a quarter dry kiss just purely for the fact that Maynard was going to let Connie stay at that house when she surely did not deserve to live there.
Petty, but I agree.
Also because they did not thoroughly do their Bigfoot research and could have incorporated more of it into the show. I watch entirely too many of those fucking documentaries about Bigfoot. Anywho, but it is definitely enjoyable. It is definitely a Christmas adjacent movie, but I think worth a watch. It is a lot of fun. So 3 3/4 dry kisses.
So Tamara, what movie? I'm so curious. What movie do we have coming up next week?
It's so funny that you asked, Corinne, because I was racking my brain yesterday trying to figure it out. Because the last fucking 2 movies that I said I wanted to do were on streaming services when I decided to do them. And then when I actually sat down to outline them, they were gone. And that pissed me off to no end. So I did find one really wacky Thanksgiving-based movie that I was contemplating doing. I think it was called like Coming Home for Christmas or something, but it was off of Netflix in 13 days. So I was like, well, fuck right off with that. And then there was a couple of other ones that I was contemplating doing, but they were not streaming anywhere for free. And I'll be damned if I'm going to pay for the next Christmas movie that I have to do. So out of the choices that I was given, either Bridget Jones' Diary, It's a Wonderful Life, or 4 Christmases, I'm going to do 4 Christmases next and hope that my brain doesn't explode because that movie has a lot of shit going on in it.
It does. That's a bold choice. Okay.
It is a bold choice, but it's also in my roster of Christmas movies I generally tend to watch around this time of year. And I enjoy it immensely. And it has tons of horrible people in it. So
yes,
Corinne,
it does.
Probably
I know.
Not like it, but I'm going to love it. I love it. I love that. Thank you, One Dry Kiss, for showing me the ways of me loving movies about horrible people. And my next one is going to be 4 Christmases with Reese Witherspoon and Vince Vaughn.
That's fantastic. I'm looking forward to it. And if you have bounce house trauma, you may not want to watch this movie.
Yes. Oh, my God. Well, there's a lot of disclaimers we should probably say.
So if you have anything that you would like to say about Pottersville, Sasquatch, our bad accents, 4 Christmases, bounce houses, you can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, X, and Facebook, all at onedrykiss.
And as always, if you could find the time to rate and review us, we deeply appreciate it. We've gotten some really sweet, very nice ones. So thank you, everybody that has written or reviewed us. It makes our hearts sing. But as always, we'd like to thank you for stopping by. And we bid you adieu with 1 dry kiss. I'll see you next time.
See you next time. It'll be a blue Christmas without you.
I appreciate the moveset that you're including in that little song and dance number, Corinne.
Thank you.
Stop shimmying your boobies at me, lady.
Oh, I can't help that they're so luscious.
And right in the camera. Taking up the whole screen. There, okay, you're hoisting him. Great, great. Because I wasn't getting enough boobage before, Corinne. Very, very gracious of you. You know, I guess it's appropriate since we're recording on Thanksgiving. And yes, you are thanking me with your tatas.
My breasts.